All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Renegade HPG, and we are going to be doing one of my favorite kind of versions of these videos, which is a director's commentary, and I have Daniel Bruins, aka DC Bruins, aka Sir Dub Dub, back for another director's commentary. I had so much fun going over Freehat, a Mech Warrior film, with him during our full podcast, which if you haven't checked out, you definitely should, and I'll link that up top and in the description down below. But today we are going to be focusing on just the director's commentary for fan-made Mech Warrior Origins, which is basically like a little historical run through the BattleTech universe. And so, Dan, thanks for coming back on. This is going to be fun. I'm very excited to talk about these. And yeah, it's going to be good.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on. Hey there, folks.
Hello, everyone.
Always good to be back.
So we talked a little bit about the background of this one in our conversation, but let's wrap it up here. For people that are kind of finding our conversations for the first time, you know, give me a little background on kind of what inspired you to kind of create this video.
Believe it or not, it was actually the Steam launch for MechWarrior Online, Piranha Games sort of mech-based arena shooter, nominally based in the MechWarrior BattleTech universe. Essentially, what MechWarrior Online basically boils down to is a sort of like a War Thunder or a World of Tanks sort of get into an arena, do some fighting, earn some XP, some credits, and get more mechs, build out a stable. Like it's a sort of grind to get the vehicle sort of experience. It's not as deep in the lore as I think it maybe could have been, or maybe that like the story itself sort of I guess deserves or is justified having. I think a lot of that just came down to just the practicalities of game development with a small studio. So, hey, here's a need of a thing that this community is actually going to want to have once we have a whole bunch of like extra players, a larger expanded player base coming in from the Steam launch, saying, hey, here's a bunch of giant robots. But did you know there's also a story involved with it? So just decided to step in, write a script, and start drawing.
Yeah. And I was watching the George Lido's voiceover video that he has up online, and I'll link that down below, of him kind of in his closet kind of recording.
Oh man, he looked like he was having so much fun with it.
It's wonderful here. It's just as engaging just with the audio and the video as well. But yeah, and so you know, it's funny, and kind of, you know, we talked about this kind of in our conversation, but you've got a lot of talents that you bring to this. And so you wrote the script, you know, you kind of animated it, you know, obviously creating the illustrations from which it animated. You know, George came in as a collaborator. Were there any other kind of collaborators that kind of helped with this, or was it mainly just you kind of, you know, in the spare time pumping it out?
I think it was the music came from an independent artist on Newgrounds.
Okay.
I don't have their name on me at the moment, but I'm sure we can
we'll definitely
link it up in the description. That was before I actually had basically like been able to save up the money to like purchase and put together this computer that I'm talking to you from right now, which is now loaded up with like pre-sampled orchestral libraries of like live instruments, so I can actually dig in and make orchestral soundtracks, which is sort of the thing that a lot of like my 2020 creative energy has gone towards.
Yeah.
So like that was sort of the one thing that like that and George's voiceover were the things that basically I was not able to just screw it, I'm doing it myself kind of things.
Yeah. Well, for those out there that know of Daniel's work and want to give him more computer equipment to produce amazing things, you know, find his Patreon. I convinced him to get a Patreon going. Sir Dub Dub on Patreon, you know, toss some money. Let's fund some more equipment. I want to see more amazing illustrations. That'd be awesome.
Oh man, thanks. Right now, I'm actually just like setting aside like a little chunk every time I get a commission to save up for a particular recorded orchestral library that focuses on low register atmospheric and emotional writing. So like sort of like soaring horns and like the that sort of like sweet low cello sound and like high harmonic violins, all recorded at the Teledex studio, I think in Berlin. With like a professional orchestra. They just brought in all of these players and they just set up a bunch of mics and had them play all of the notes. So you can then just like go in with a music production program and just plug those sounds in, and it sounds like a real orchestra when you're playing on a keyboard. It's really fun. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I look forward. I know on your channel you have some music up there as well, and so yeah, I kind of I'm subscribed, and so whenever something new goes up, I kind of catch it. Yeah. But we got the director's commentary up. Last time we just kind of drove into the commentary expecting people to watch it, but I figured this time we can actually kind of let it play through once, on a little screen share, and then we can kind of go back and check it out so that people don't have to kind of click off the video if they haven't seen it. But we can set up a screen share, and then we can kind of start diving into the awesomeness of Battletech.
Yeah, so I'll just click that screen share button. MechWarrior Origins, sort of introductory video. This is the Battletech universe.
Excellent. Let's do it.
Here we go.
It began with fire. Armed with the power of the stars, humanity built its way out of the mud and stone of ancient Terra. We forged the modern age. An age in which we would no longer be bound by the limits of our strength or the confines of our little blue world. We tore holes in reality and flung ourselves into the furthest reaches of the void. And we prospered. Over the course of only a few hundred years, we expanded into space and built the most powerful civilization this species has ever seen. Hundreds of billions of people, living on thousands of planets, ruled by a dozen greater and lesser kingdoms, and united under the imperial banner of the Star League, in a period of unprecedented prosperity, relative peace, and technological marvels. United, not always by choice. The fires of the Unification Wars were ruled by gods. Titanic, fusion-powered war machines known as Battlemechs. But this grand palace of human achievement was built on the foundation of conquest and empire, and, over time, it was eroded by apathy, corruption, and infighting, until treachery and murder finally plunged the Star League into chaos. With the Golden Age slipping into civil war, General Alexander Kerensky, commander of the vast armies of the Star League, gathered those still loyal to him and left the Inner Sphere, disappearing into the vast reaches of deep space. It was a final, desperate gamble to preserve the Golden Age. By removing the most powerful army in human history from the hands of the so-called successor states, Kerensky hoped to force them into a peaceful resolution. He failed. For the next 300 years, the Inner Sphere consumed itself in hellfire. In their bids for the empty throne of the Star League, each of the great houses burnt away their incalculable fortunes of wealth, technology, and humanity. Their futile attempts to reunite the galaxy under their own banners laid waste to the Inner Sphere, bringing ruin to untold numbers of people and shattering a thousand years' worth of progress. The year is 3051 AD. The successor states have exhausted themselves. The raging fires of the succession wars have burned to embers. The Battlemechs, once the symbol of the might of humanity, now serve as the avatars of a mythic bygone age, slowly decaying into ruin. Now, 300 years after the shattering of empire, the followers of Kerensky have returned. The flames of conquest rage anew.
And there it is.
All right.
All right. Let's talk about it. All right, let's get to the beginning.
Oh, yeah. So, like, how, what, the like, hardest thing, I think, to boil down a universe this big into something that's only, like, 3 minutes long, something that's small, is a lot of things have to be cut, a lot of, like, really intricate, satisfying detail has to be sort of stripped down to the barest, most like fundamental pieces, and all of it has to be delivered with some sort of immediate punch, right. So you could do something like what Tex at Tex Talks BattleTech has like started to do, is like do really, really big deep dives into these things and get a lot of like you build the story, you build the tension, you build all of this stuff, and you get that satisfying like sort of like a full realization of what's going on. I have what is the most important technology in the BattleTech universe. There's sort of like two of them. The first, like the one that we sort of think about all the time, is jump ships, right? The idea of like you're able to actually access some sort of whatever your universe is of hyperspeed travel is, right?
Right.
BattleTech, I think, does it in a really fun way, in that it's like they limit themselves specifically by these ships are only meant to jump between systems and not really to move around all that much within them. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how realistic the like all of the physics is of the thing I'm about to talk about, but the idea of jump sickness always just like struck me as one of those like great little things that the universe does where like, yes, fine, we'll let you have this super physics going on here. Like you can have this little bit of space magic, but it's going to have these sort of like hard limits to it. Mm-hmm. Also, by the way, you jump 30 light years and there's a good chance that your body is just going to react badly and you're going to instantly throw up because, yeah, humans aren't made to be traveling between dimensions like that, obviously.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because I was when I was in high school, and well, when I went into college, I went to study astrophysics, and I was fascinated with wormholes, and so it was fast and light travel. And I remember my AOL chat username was Kearney 2020, you know, stuff. And because I was inspired by, you know, the jump technology of BattleTech, and then of course all my Star Trek watching, and you know, looking at wormholes, and you know, I wanted to study wormhole theory. It turned out my brain didn't quite retain data the way it needed to, and so I switched my focus to athletics. But yeah, it's it was there. It was Kearney 2020. It was my original AOL username.
See, and for me, it actually wasn't. It wasn't the hyperspeed that like got me interested in BattleTech. It was fire, fusion reactors. The idea of like being able to take and compress a miniature sun into essentially what is a monstrous form of energy, like a monstrous amount of energy that basically just comes from water, right? And reading the BattleTech books and like learning how like quintessential fusion power plant is for the whole universe to work, like it got me interested in just like looking into like this sort of aspect of nuclear power. This drawing actually is basically a recreation of the Joint European Torus test reactor in France that lit up a couple of years ago. You can actually go and find like videos on YouTube of this thing like going off, and there's this like beautiful sort of like pink violet fiery rings of plasma that are just like circling in and around this whole thing. this, I think, is like the core and the heart of what makes the BattleTech universe sort of like work and sort of sing. This is the defining piece of technology that separates their universe from this one. Okay. Their universe, basically, math and physics works a little bit easier, and you can have more powerful fusion reactors earlier than what we had here, and that just like immediately created this gigantic explosion in technological advancement. So yeah, I do still love that opening line, just it began with fire. Boom. Yeah. And we just have hey, look. Hi London. How you doing, London? And then we just started like building stuff on top of that, saying, hey, we got big. And not only did we got big fast. And we have like the sort of prototype jump ships. And that leads to this enormous expansion of like technology and population and sort of power. I actually had a pretty good talk with Tex at Tex Talks when I was working on bits for the Mackie episode. Basically, like one of the fundamental sort of themes that we came to for like what the BattleTech universe is and what it's about and what it's like an allegory for or a warning for or against, or like something to like keep in mind as just like humans delve into these sort of mysteries and advancements. The BattleTech universe to me is a world in which humanity becomes powerful before we are wise enough to wield that power.
Well, that's certainly a theme that resonates, you know, between the development of AI and just technology, certainly nuclear technology, which we're already dealing with, but yeah.
And so obviously you have to have that whole, you expand out and you like draw out the whole like inner sphere. Mm-hmm. And then each of these little like, there's like a little pattern, like a colored pattern within each of the sort of segments. Those are just like copied and pasted from, I did like a series of desktops, like desktop images, featuring all the factions and their little logo. And it's just slapped in there, pasted in there, because it works. It's there. Yeah, yeah. You got all the little capital worlds sort of lit up, and then up and up, up in that little corner, you've got a little bit of the Rossalon, because they didn't like technically have their own world yet. I got the whole like the Star League banner, and if you notice, it kind of that Cameron star shows up and it overlays over the rest of the inner sphere, and everything else becomes a little bit more desaturated under that, sort of symbolizing, hey, these folks were sort of the ones that ended up basically like running and dictating everything, but it wasn't necessarily, you know, the thing that everyone was happy with. Which obviously leads us to giant stompy robots. And like one of the things that I wanted to do with this project was take Alex Iglesias's his concept art, his designs for the MechWarrior Online mechs, and really showcase them in in a sort of cinematic and grounded basis. Beyond just what you see in the actual like game of MechWarrior Online. So it's like this is what these machines like really feel like and what they really exist in. So this I sort of pictured almost like a snapshot from an old Reunification Wars like a documentary, right? So this is like some grainy black and white footage.
Yeah. No, I love these illustrations so much more than a lot of what we get, because a lot of what we get now is just like, here's a cool mech on a battlefield.
Yeah.
You know, and I miss kind of the old, Jim Holloway, Boris Vallejo type sketches, where it was like what you're saying. It's a snapshot. It's like this, you know, it's, you know, give us the entire scene and the environment and feel it. So yeah, it's awesome.
Because you do have to remember it, like BattleTech is a gigantic universe and mechs themselves are actually incredibly rare and incredibly sort of like these precious pieces of ancient technology. Mm-hmm. Most people maybe will see like one of them in their entire lifetime, and otherwise they'll just like see pictures of these things, right? They're for the most part, like BattleTech feels like it feels like a sort of grounded universe in the fact that at any point in like the given history, for about 90% of like the total population of like the rest of the galaxy, like it's things are just kind of boring and are exactly how they are. Like, so you just have this like real life existing on top of this stark space opera that's like layered over everything, which is sort of a fun, it's a fun like realism dynamic that BattleTech really shoots for. It's nice.
And I often catch myself thinking about that, because you always kind of imagine, I was like, man, if I was in that universe, I'd be a mech warrior, I'd be this, or I'd be involved in the kind of the drama. But then you kind of, scale back to the fact that there's, that kind of, action excitement going on in our world. And here we are talking about, battle a game and videos. Yep. And it's a, there's just so much other stuff of just people living their lives. And certainly in the inner sphere where you got well over 1,000 planets, I think.
Yeah.
The rest of life.
Yeah. Like every time I boot up a MechWarrior game, whether it's MechWarrior 4, MechWarrior 5, MechWarrior Online, I can't justify giving myself a mech that weighs more than 55 tons. because in the lore, they stated very clearly the vast majority of mechs that exist in this universe are either light mechs, mm-hmm. or like medium mechs, which are the workhorses of basically every army, every mercenary unit, every sort of military group. You're most likely to get stuck, to be placed in like a Centurion or a Shadowhawk or a Locust or something, like something really small.
If you're lucky, it's more like a Wasp or something, or a Stinger.
Yeah.
That's funny. So, I feel the same way. I feel like, does that mean we're best friends now? Type of thing. Because whenever I play, I'm like, what are these people that are just playing at lances of assault mechs and heavy mechs? It's like, for me, it's like, it's mainly lights, medium, throwing a heavy, so awesome.
Every so often I catch myself just like sort of eyeing up an Atlas and then immediately say to myself, Dan, you're not that special. You wouldn't be that special. Get back in the Griffin. That's it. There you go. Stick with that one. Yeah.
Griffin's a good ride. I love
Griffin's a good ride.
Almost all my lances have at least one Griffin if I can.
Yeah. I've been starting to like appreciate being able to actually move around and have jump jets as opposed to just stomping around in a hunchback the whole time.
Yep. Even the Centurion, you think about the Centurion as this kind of sexy fast mech, but Centurion's a 4.64, or at least the old one was. Not a fast guy.
Yeah, it's just a stocky little brawler. I do like the sort of almost like boxing motion that playing the Centurion MechWarrior Online seems to get, because you have that whole shield, so you can like dead side. So you actually feels like a little bit like block the thing, throw a right hook, block the thing, throw a right. Like that feels cool, man. Yeah,
awesome.
Then we have Richard Cameron. Yep. Not only did you get sort of wiped out by Stefan Amaris, but this was a little bit before I really figured out how to draw people, so you're sort of a blur. That's fine.
All good. The rising smoke effect is great.
Yeah, and that sort of like light beaming in. If I ever like did more lore videos, I would try to add some more like depth and layering to a scene like this. It feels a little flat to me right now. But then you've got, it's the sad old man himself.
Mm-hmm. Destined. He looks like he's destined to be a Clan aerospace pilot.
Oh no, he does. This is also before I figured out how proportions work. That's fine. You got to learn somewhere. You got to learn somehow.
Of course.
I do like that dramatic lighting that we have. Mm-hmm. That sort of like stark, almost like grim, apocalyptic sunset look. And Kerensky fades out. The whole scene fades black. This is actually just a recreation of the Protector hero mech from MechWarrior Online.
Okay.
Which was supposed to be, hey, this was the actual mech that Kerensky used in the war against Stefan Ameris. This is the thing that he like smashed through his final sort of fortress with.
Yeah.
And we just have him taken off with a couple of overlords. So this is recreating the actual loadout too. So it was saying, hey, people, you can run this thing.
I'm making a card out of it. Put it on my queue.
Nice. And then the line here is by removing this army from the so-called successor states, Kerensky hopes to force them into a peaceful resolution. As I'm like reading into more of the lore of that time now, that's not quite accurate, but it feels right for this one. In the actual lore, Kerensky was like, this thing is gonna happen anyway. I just don't want to have all of my dudes added to that. So he decided to take them out. And then my, I think, second favorite shot of this entire movie is just that utter chaos of a first succession war battlefield.
Yeah.
And I absolutely, absolutely wanted to lean into that that World War I vibe, right?
Okay.
Because at the time I'd been making this, I'd been listening to Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, where it's just like this in-depth look. Specifically, he was doing a series on World War I. And I sort of saw a lot of narrative parallels between like an old feudal system of royalty going to war with technology that hadn't been used this way in a long time. At least not to this scale in a long time, and the combination of old world thinking and new world technology resulted in this enormous amount of human suffering, and I think World War I trench warfare with battle mechs striding over the field and just nuclear explosions going on in the background, like that's the apocalypse that the succession wars actually resulted in, right? So like that's sort of the scale of it and the sort of shrinking down of individual people to just numbers on a chart was sort of the thing that I really wanted to like nail home in this image. This is not a great time to be a citizen of the Inner Sphere.
No, definitely not a soldier.
Yeah. And then you got this like sort of warping effect of that on that nuke. That was a fun After Effects trick that I learned to do this. And you just have this is sort of the shot that's just straight up ripped from one of the Terminator movies, I think.
It's been used in a lot of movies.
Yeah,
and it's so many different things. Yeah, you see the
and nukes. Then this was actually meant to be sort of like an establishing shot. This is taken actually from a piece of concept art from MechWarrior Revival, which had been the sort of animated trailer that I'd done with the No Guts No Galaxy team. This was supposed to be a shot sort of what the planet that story would take place on was sort of like, a sort of cold, a little bit damp, desolate sort of world. So you got in the background, you have like a crashed dropship. And just like an old, I think it's like an old Soviet style truck that's just sitting out there in the front, I wanted to get this idea of people basically just like building houses and building villages in the relics of this old world, right? And like one of the opening stories of this new series would have been like they need to replace a particular part of the main character's hunchback, and it's like a gyro computer or something. And in order to they need two of it. They found one of them by ripping the gearbox out of this truck, and they have to like drive into the like the village to get another one. And you have this like dynamic between like a one-armed mechanic who's yelling at his co-pilot to like shift gears while he's driving the whole thing.
Awesome.
Neither of them are happy about this situation, so it sort of like came out pretty well. That whole story's sort of like been rewritten entirely, so I'm comfortable sharing the details of it now.
No, that's a cool mechanic. I mean, you see that in The Force Awakens, you know, with Rey, you know, kind of hiding in the wreckage of the Jakku battle.
And then this is an illustration that I'm still pretty proud of, even looking at it like 5 years later. The lighting and atmosphere and those little like water droplets just pouring off of this ancient swamp-ridden hunchback. This is that one of those images that you're talking about. It's not just mechs on a battlefield. It is machines existing in the real world. And like there's a reason why Alex stuck like tow cables and winches and little ladders all over these machines when he did his redesigns, because these are machines that have to exist not only as like fighting vehicles, but they've been around for hundreds of years, and they're like almost like walking sort of bases, right? So they exist not only to fight off the bad guys on your planet, but like you can fit half of a field kitchen into like a big old ramshackle backpack that you sling over the hunchback shoulder and just have it tool around the planet with that.
I love the idea too of kind of using battle mechs just kind of on a construction site and just kind of carrying girders and lifting up, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, Awesome's not going to help a whole lot, or Warhammer's not going to help a lot in that, but you know, you can get your Wasp out there and, you know, carry some girders, you know, out there and kind of.
Or like something that went into, I think, the development of the Vindicator was like, we could go ahead and give this mech two PPCs with that sort of like coolant pump thing that you can dip in the water and cool it off with. But they sat back for a second and they went, actually, no, it needs a hand so it can carry stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so they intentionally and purposefully limited the potential firepower for this machine in order to give it more of a utilitarian value. And I really like that. I like that.
Where'd you pull that from? Where's that background?
I think that was listed on Sarna.
Okay.
Either on Sarna or on one of, there's, it could be Critical Rocket, who does a little like a short lore series on like individual mechs.
Gotcha. Yeah, I love the Vindicator. It's one of my favorites. I haven't found any modern art of the Vindicator actually out there. There's some old stuff from like the Battle Force magazines but nothing new.
I will see if I can dig around and send you some images of that, or just go ahead and make some of my own, because I do like the Vindicator as like it is an extension of like the Capellan mindset at the time, right? Because the Vindicator was made in like towards the end of like the third or fourth Succession War, when Davion just like went in and just basically ate half of the Capellan Confederation. So all of these Capellans are just sitting here like, okay, we have this like basically demolished industrial base, almost no dudes in our army. What do we do? Oh, I know. We'll build a tiny but utterly fanatic force and arm them with whatever the hell we can get our hands on. It'll be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's how you get like the Cataphract and the Vindicator of just, we have the parts. Put it together. Let's go. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a great shot. I love the shot.
A little like birds and flies sort of swirling around. And then, yeah, this one. Mm-hmm.
It's my favorite. I need to get a print of this either from you or if you don't sell them, I did this, figure out how to get one printed.
I think you should be able to find a high-res version on my DeviantArt page.
Cool.
Something of that sort. And this is actually a sort of fun little detail. The colors that this hunchback are actually painted in are the same ones that my old unit in MechWarrior Online used to use. Okay. That's sort of like gray and blue and like with like red stripes all over it. That was a hypothetical fifth Dracones. Okay. Because there were apparently four Dracone units in like the Free Rasselhog Republic. All four of them basically get completely wiped out either in the clan invasion or in Operation Bulldog or Operation Serpent as they're like trying to take out Smoke Jaguar. Mm-hmm. So that was just like a little nod to my buddies in that group.
Awesome.
Yeah, and then just that composition of you have a pilot looking on as basically Hellfire is raining down from the sky. So that's like that's the same shot as the end of Freehead, and that's the same shot that shows up in MechWarrior Revival. Mm-hmm. So I really like that idea of just like stars or comets falling from the sky and hell is coming with it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, any art that shows kind of the mechs, you know, sitting outside the cockpit or the cockpit open, you know, are I'm a big fan of.
Yeah, anything just makes it feel like a real thing that exists in real space, which is that makes it a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love Jin Ravana's you know, catapult illustration with the pilot kind of sitting on the bay smoking a cigarette.
Yeah. Yeah, we need more of those.
Yes.
It's a good time.
Do it.
Yeah, and then I think in the future I would love to do more like short little lore. I would have loved to do more short little lore clips like this, but honestly, I do think that folks like the Black Pants Legion, like Text Talks BattleTech, have taken up the mantle of this and just done it so well that it's really encouraging and fun to see that come back.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, yeah, Tex does a wonderful job. Actually, I connected to him in the comments of one of the videos. I think it was one of your videos, actually. You know, so hopefully I can get him on. We can kind of chat on the podcast. That'd be fun. But
yeah,
it's a lot of great stuff. I always, I put him on at night and then I end up falling asleep and then I got to go back and kind of, you know, watch what I missed. But yep. It's been good stuff. Well, what are some ideas that you have for shorts? You know, what can out there and what goes into it? Because I know that for Freehat, when that was published, I mean, there was tons of kind of community, you know, people saying, hey, give us a GoFundMe or something that we can kind of throw money into, but which isn't really an option, you know, because of legal hurdles. But, you know, what, you know, if someone wanted to kind of, you know, come in, commission like a little video or something, you know, or just looking at the kind of time involved, you know, what does that look like for you? What is a project like that? In terms of commitment, in terms of, you know.
It is, like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it or sort of like, give an overly optimistic idea. Making one of these films takes a lot of time and a lot of work, a lot of effort to make things look and feel the way that they are supposed to. Mm-hmm. I think currently, if we're looking at trying to make like a 3 or 4 minute movie, sort of like Freehead or like the thing you've just seen, lore videos, those sort of like animated illustrations like MechWarrior, like MechWarrior Universe, the sort of origins.
Yeah.
That sort of thing is much more approachable and much easier to do. Because that video was, I think, 12 drawings, 12 illustrations, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
12 illustrations will get you about 1 second of animation. Now, multiply that to full like 3-4 minutes of a thing, and it gets kind of crazy very quickly. I think what a couple of people have had interest in is sort of very short, like 5 to 10 second clips of like intros to streams or intros to like YouTube videos and things like that. Those I think would be absolutely in my wheelhouse and something that I would be able to do and be able to fully commit to. Otherwise, for like very, very big, like narrative long-term projects, I kind of would like to not have to make promises to people that I may or may not be able to keep. So I'm going to work on things on my own time, and it'll be done when it's done, and we're going to make it as good as we can make it.
Well, yeah, I'd imagine people would just have to employ you for several months, you know, in order to kind of do that.
That's pretty much what it is,
I mean, that's something like in a budget of HBS or Paradox, something like that. Yeah. You know, if people, for YouTube out there, I know we've chatted about it here once, for Renegade HPG grows and, the economy starts up and I can afford stuff of getting like a little intro for this channel. But, what's, if you're doing commissions and people that are out there and kind of interested, Daniel does take commissions. And so make sure, kind of put that information out there. But what is kind of the budget and timetable for if someone did like a 5 second 10 second intro skit for a video?
I think depending on how sort of like how many moving parts you're sort of making and using with it, to what level do you want this thing to look like a Michael Bay movie essentially? I would say that an animation of that sort for a 5 to 10 second clip of like, I don't know, say a centurion sort of like stomping towards the screen, blocking a shot and firing off an autocannon, that could range anywhere from maybe $100 to about $300. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's something that could be done depending on like how your timetable sort of works out. That's something that could be done within maybe 2 to 4 weeks, depending on just how schedules sort of shake out.
Gotcha. That's not bad. Yeah. Cool. Well, people out there, if you're interested, ping Daniel. I'll put all the contact information down below.
Hey, thanks.
But this was awesome. How long did it take to make this one, even with just the illustrations? But
this one was like, I think writing the script for it took about 3 days of just back and forth pacing through this room. And just like typing out in a Google Doc and just like reading it aloud in my own stupid voice. trying to get all like low and grungy like George LaDue, like, yeah, this is blah, 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 blah. It began with fire. Yeah.
Well, you got 1,100 years to put into 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So I imagine there's lots of pacing and a lot of
like how flowery do you want the language to be, how poetic you want everything to look. So that was done, and then it was about 2 months of doing illustration sort of on and off between a full-time job. And that was like during the busy season of said full-time job, so we were it was like work a 12-hour day, come home, draw mechs all night, wake up, work another 12-hour day, home, draw mech. But that was something that could be done within that time frame, as opposed to trying to make a full animated movie, which just it is a lot of work, and I'm not going to sort of make excuses about that.
So yeah, well, I gotta imagine that's like at least 6 months full time work, to kind of put into that. But awesome. Well, we got one more. We'll get MechWarrior Revival next, on this will be our trilogy, our Ruins Director's Commentary trilogy.
I'll see if I can actually like dig in and find the original Adobe Flash, Adobe Animate file, so we can like pick apart how each of the little like mechs moves and like all the little bits that go into it. So that should be fun.
It'll be definitely fun. I look forward to it. So we'll get it on the schedule. Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, Daniel. Thanks for taking us through MechWarrior Origins. It's been fun.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Definitely. All right.